countries that don't exist anymore. They used to exist, but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for. It's countries that don't exist anymore.
Welcome to Countries That Don't Exist Anymore. Hello, listeners listening. Thank you very much. This is our in-betweeny episode after Altklut. Sorry you had to wait an extra week, but I hope it's worth it because we have a return of one of our favourite ever guests who's going to be introduced by my brother, Ed.
Yes, that's right. No, I was delighted actually to learn about Altklut, and it's definitely a really interesting thing. It's very close to home, but at the same time feels very far off and ancient and mysterious, and that is really the exciting secret pawn stash of countries that don't exist anymore, I think. Talking of exciting secret pawn stashes, we are inviting back to the show a man who, every time he opens his mouth, it's just like page 42 of Razzle magazine. It's just delightful and disgusting and never to be experienced again. He's a man who's a writer for many things, BBC radio, all kinds of things. He's a great stand-up comedian, and also he's a great four times friend of the podcast. Please welcome back to Countries That Don't Exist Anymore, as if you couldn't have guessed, it's Mr. Mike Shepherd.
Hello gents, good to be with you, good to be back.
Yes,
thanks for having me,
thank you for coming back too. Yeah, we got Mike back because sometimes when we're doing an episode on a distant, far-flung country, we'll try and get a representative of that country or just an expert in that country. Given that we're talking about Altklut, the sort of mixture between Welsh, Brythonic, Scottish, whatever else, Mike is our indigenous, native British Indian.
My mum's family are Scottish. Some of them, but they were from Aberdeenshire, so I have been past Dumbarton Rock on a train, and it does look, the little bit you go, yeah, I'd put my stronghold there. It still has a kind of a mystical power.
Phil, are you okay with that?
Yeah, qualifies you as far as we're qualified.
Well, that's
yeah,
the thing is, we look at, as you were saying, all concepts of nationality are ridiculous and normally invented in the last 150 years, particularly when you're looking at the kind of time period we're discussing today, everybody looks at the British Isles the wrong way anyway. You should be looking at the water, because that's the, for anyone to get anywhere, they were travelling by boats. Mm-hmm. So really, it all makes sense that the Isle of Man and the north of Ireland and the west coast of Scotland and the Scandinavian colonies were all kind of tied up together.
Yeah, yeah. Like Marshall Mathers once said, they had to go round the outside to get.
Isn't that from a Malcolm McLaren song?
Thank you, Phil. I was about to say that, but didn't want to get broken down as the interfering older brother. But that's great. It is from Malcolm McLaren.
Correct.
So, yeah, well done, Mike.
Pop trivia round of the 8th century.
You'll never be invited on the punk history podcast, Phil, with massive gaps like that.
There goes my dreams.
Countries that don't exist anymore.
The first, I think, was really interesting for me is, again, neighbourhood country, very close to us, even if you just go past it on train. But really, I hadn't heard that much about it. Altklut originally, which I think is the great name, rock on the Clyde, and then turning to Strathclyde, which is valley on the Clyde, less good, definitely less good.
Yes, or was it sometimes Strathclwyd? Is that because it's basically a kind of exclave of Welsh culture that occupied the west coast of Scotland. It's an exciting notion, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what's very exciting about it. Why do we think that not that many people have heard of it?
Well, I suppose when you think of Saxon kingdoms, and I know I've been on talking to you about Mercia before, but even the phrase, I know people don't use it much anymore, but the Heptarchy. So people think of England, and England's sort of cut up quite neatly, isn't it, into those seven kingdoms that maybe anyone with a bit of an interest in history can sometimes remember, and they sort of carry on into counties that we recognise, like Sussex and Kent and things like that. So that all seems like a nice cosy little setup of Anglo-Saxon kingdoms. And then the further north up Great Britain you get, it all gets a bit messier, and there are sort of small sub-kingdoms that pop in and out of existence, and Berenicea and things like that, and you know, it kind of gets a bit vague, doesn't it? And now you think, and even the legacy, so like Mercia still had a, you know, it still crops up, doesn't it, as the name of the police force and things like mm-hmm. that. Strathclyde was the name of the police force for anyone who watched Taggart in the 90s, I remember that. But now they just have Police Scotland. And the University of Strathclyde, which I did go on their website today and noticed that ambitiously, the University of Strathclyde describes itself as the second oldest university in Glasgow, which which is doing a lot of work, that second oldest, because obviously the University of Glasgow was founded in 1495 and the University of Strathclyde got its charter in 1964.
That's a brilliant technicality there.
Yeah. Second oldest. Yeah.
I did a 100-meter race against Usain Bolt. I was the second fastest guy.
Yeah,
second fastest guy on the field.
Yeah, second only to Usain Bolt.
I mean, sure, there was about a 500-year difference on the finish line, but it's the same thing. Maybe it's one of those things, I think, where it doesn't really fit the idea of Alclut, you know, this Breton, the Old North, this Brythonic kingdom doesn't fit very neatly into our idea of like the four nations, I guess, of the British and Irish Isles, you know, because we have sort of England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, and then we work back from that. And having this sort of older Welsh, we can call them, but sort of Brythonic kingdom up where the north of England and the south of Scotland should be feels a bit maybe uncomfortable to the sort of narratives we expect, the things that lead to where we are now. But also, from my point of view, incredibly refreshing. But I think it's probably that. I think it probably gets in the way of some of the national stories.
On both sides of that border, isn't there? There's an attitude in this country from people on both sides of that border that like to imagine that it is sort of an impermeable force field, that if you go across the Scottish border, like if you're holding a gin and tonic in your hand as the train rattles over, it'll suddenly become a mug of Buckfast or a single malt. Like And oddly, I mean, geologically, Scotland is also wildly different from England.
But, yeah, it but got also, attached, it's just, didn't it, later?
It's, yes, it came. Yeah. Yes, it got stuck on. It was actually weirdly a part of Canada in the supercontinent times, and then sidled its way over and plugged itself on top of England, which is, and then obviously hundreds of years later, people from Scotland then travelled to Canada and went, "Oh, brilliant! A giant version of home. Lovely.
Let's call everything Nova Us."
This is why we bring you in, Mike. You know, sometimes I'm going, well, actually, if you look back to Roman times, and you're like,
no,
let's look
Pangaea.
At the tectonic plates. Yeah, that's when we really need to get down. Let's get nitty gritty about this. Let's talk about when lots of the little planetoids form together into a ball, and then we'll really get to the point of identity. Yeah. That's
the
right.
Scottish identity started when the accumulation disc.
The planetoids, and they're like, "See you, Jimmy." Oof, like that, and they're just nutting each other, and then Scotland was slowly formed into a ball. And that's the sort of jokes that we didn't do on the show, because we weren't talking about Scottish people.
No, exactly.
We were talking about, that's right. And it was only, and also, I've got a Scottish girlfriend, and she was paying attention to what I was saying. So
you see, peace can exist between between nations.
There just has to be fear.
Your proof.
That's all. Fear. Fear on one side, and then we're basically fine. In the same way, it's because, you know, people haven't really heard about Clute. In the same way, I think we said in the show that the area where it existed, and certainly around bits of Glasgow, obviously sectarianism, that, you know, there would be the sort of lowland Scots, the lowland Protestant Scots, and then you'd have the sort of people who definitely think of themselves as Celtic and Irish and Catholic. But it's not like there's a third party going, "Well, don't worry, I'm Brythonic." You know, there's not like that. That sort of the Alclut rock of the Clyde remaining.
I think, I mean, now, isn't it? The test is if you consider yourself Celtic, you have to think, Did I grow up in an area where if Hollywood ever sets a scene in a movie there, will they play wistful flutes over the soundtrack?
That's 100% it.
And that normally means that's either Vietnam or Ireland and Scotland. I don't know. Yeah. Different flutes, but basically similar sound cue.
Yeah, someone's stroking some long grass or something.
Yeah.
If you go to the Edinburgh Festival, it doesn't matter what kind of Indigenous American you claim to be, there will be an album which is like panpipe classics, and you'll just be expected to play the panpipes, even though it's got nothing to do, and like they're invented about 2,000 miles away from where your people were from. It doesn't matter. It's almost like it's all bollocks. But the important thing is, yeah, in this respect, that definitely homogenized. And there's definitely, like, identities are, obviously, there's a good pick and mix counter.
A lot of things that are core to supposed Celtic identity. There's the Celtic revival of the end of the 19th century, which, again, is all very admirable because people are saying it's not rubbish to be Celtic. But people started looking for things that could sort of unify Welsh and Scottish and Irish identity, and so you have things like the Irish kilt, which is completely inauthentic. And you know, even the Scottish kilt is fairly inauthentic as things go, but you know, if you've got nice legs as a man and want to hide the beer gut, then I recommend it highly, because that's why I've got one.
Countries that don't exist anymore.
During the episode, obviously, we talked about the classic Scottish story of William Wallace, Braveheart.
Guillaume de Wallay.
Yeah, exactly. It's William de Wallay, who definitely came from the area of Alt Clut, and definitely his name suggested that he wasn't absolutely 100% certified as a Scot in the sense. Now, by the way, I should say that's not a criticism. I certainly remember going out with someone Scottish many, many, many years ago, before my girlfriend. I remember saying at one point, did you know that Edinburgh was actually an Anglo-Saxon settlement? As if that took away from the fact that
it exists. And it still is to this day.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like when I was a teenager, I was a bit of a dick in that respect. You know, I mean, I wasn't a teenager at the time, but it was definitely one of those things where I was just like, oh, by the way, you romantic Scot, you know, this person thinking about being Scottish, some of it's bullshit. And it's just like, yeah, I know it's bullshit.
Almost everything everyone thinks is true is bullshit. That's
bullshit.
That's how history works, isn't it?
Well, except for the fact that there will always be an England.
Oh, God, yeah. Really? even with the cricket team, it's very important that's the England and Wales cricket team. And I'm like, yeah, go on, and Wales.
Yeah.
Don't worry, because I know that England was running out of steam in definitely the 17th century, and that's why there was a new England that was set up, just to make sure that it could carry on. So I think probably by 200 years from now, we'll definitely have a new England, probably on the revolving moons of Saturn. I would have thought.
So it's always an interesting one, isn't it? I'm glad you raised that, because I always find it interesting when sometimes people like to say things like, oh God, Americans are so brash and obnoxious and think they're the best at everything. How did they lose their connection with their English roots? And you're like, did they?
Countries that don't exist anymore.
We talked in the episode about Saint Mungo. Mungo always sounds like an incredibly Victorian name to me. Mungo Parks and whatever else. And that always interested me. Definitely some of the legends of Saint Mungo, who was probably as close as
Mungo Park was a Glaswegian, wasn't he? There's certainly a monument to him in Glasgow. So I presumably he was named after Saint Mungo.
So he was obviously a man of his time and place. So if Saint Andrew became the patron saint of the Scots, which he did, then obviously Saint Mungo was probably, or I would say definitely, the patron saint of the Brythonic people of Alt Clut and Strathclyde. But what I think, when we talked about him in the episode, we couldn't help but talk about the rather ridiculous miracle attached to him, where basically it's a very sort of Shaggy Dog tale, where the miracle is that a ring was tossed in some water and he got someone to do some fishing. He sort of got someone else to take the job on, and they caught a fish and they opened it up and the ring was inside, and that was kind of a miracle. But that's not...
I don't know. I mean, it seems like a very early precursor of the things that David Attenborough has been warning us about. I mean, if that was a drinking straw rather than a ring, we'd be viewing that story very differently, wouldn't we?
Exactly, yeah.
I think it really sort of speaks to medieval stories of miracles, which are always a delight, I think. Mm-hmm. And so what I thought would be good is if we could share some of our favourites, medieval miracles, in a section I like to call...
Medieval miracles.
When I was on discussing Mercia, I think I did throw in a mention of St. Cuthman, who was who built a church in a town called Stenning in Sussex. Mm-hmm. And one of the main sort of things that he's associated with is pulling his own mother around in a wheelbarrow. I think what that... The difficulty is so a saint needs at least two miracles to become accredited as a saint, but there's like a kind of a weird sweet spot where you don't want anything too outlandish. It needs to be significant but not ridiculous. One of the ones I'm quite interested in is St. Richard of Chichester. He was associated with two miracles, and I think what happened there is they went very much at either end of the scale. Now, I'm going to tell you both of the miracles of St. Richard of Chichester. Now, I believe one of these to almost certainly be based in fact, and the other one not to be, and I'm not going to tell you which one. So the two miracles associated with St. Richard of Chichester are, one, that the devil, with horns and cloven hooves, interrupted him saying Mass, and he grabbed him by the nose with a pair of blacksmith's pliers and led him from the church and banished him. So that's Satan, the Lord of Darkness, there being pulled with pliers. Mm-hmm. And banished. Or, second miracle, when he was performing the Holy Communion with the wine that he believes to be the blood of Jesus Christ, he dropped the cup, but it didn't spill.
Oh, it just landed.
Yeah. Now, I think one of those may have some basis in fact.
Me too. The devil one.
Yeah, that's it. Banishing Satan by the nose. That happened.
Was it like Halloween? It wasn't just a guy dressed up.
That's, yeah. Oh, yes. They're sort of, oh, no, the miracle plays have been ruined for another year.
I just like the fact that they're probably on their way to get their miracles confirmed by the Catholic Church. And they're like, okay, we've got the Satan, getting Satan by the nose with pliers or whatever. Yeah. That's gold. I think it's in the bag. And they're like,
Have you got anything else?
You know, what two, like, oh, shit, two.
Mention the cup one. Mention the cup one.
What did you do last night with that? You know, you dropped your cup on the floor and it's like, didn't spill any beer. I think I've seen that. I think I've seen that miracle several times. Of someone just going, what?
Yeah, drunkenly as well. Like, they trip over, go, didn't he spill a drop?
Did he also go to the toiletus and do a poo, and then he did a wipe, and it was a clean toilet.
And lo!
Oh!
He should have done that thing where you get the cup of the chalice, and then you do the 360 thing with your arm, you know, and you don't spill any of it.
Yeah,
should have done that. Like
the
that.
Old centrifugal force.
That's right. Or you get the card, and you turn it upside down, and you're like...
Yeah. Oh, miracle.
That's it. I mean, on reflection now, I think, like, probably St. Richard of Chichester was a bit of a lad in the pub, wasn't he? He's balancing, like, loads of empty cups, like, cups of wine. He's doing press-ups on them. And then he's like, did I tell you about... I don't know if it came from St. Richard of Chichester himself, but, you know, like, how there's often, like, a fat bloke in the back of a kind of provincial pub claiming that he was once in the SAS.
Yeah.
Like, is this the sort of medieval bishop equivalent is saying, oh, yeah, Satan, no, yeah, you won't see him around here anymore, no, because he actually came into my church once, yeah, and I told him what for.
Well, speaking of violence, I've got one as well, which is called which is the miracle of Saint Guthlac's belt. So Saint Guthlac, 675 to 714, once came across a madman named Edgar. He wrapped his belt around Edgar and squeezed him until a demon flew out of Edgar's mouth. Edgar never took off the belt, and his madness never returned.
Oh, that must have stank.
Wow.
You know, yeah, you don't take off a watch for ages.
I mean, oddly, isn't it?
It's all like, cheesy.
That's such a strange story, because it's like, oh, you see that weird bloke who always keeps the same belt on all the time? Yeah, I do see that mad bloke. It's like, yeah, he's cured of his madness by the belt. No, he was not cured of his madness by that, but that belt-obsessed yeah. prick.
You see that gibbering guy walking yeah, down yeah. the road wearing that belt? He got cured of his madness.
Yeah.
You see that guy shitting his pants walking down the road, shouting at the sky? He got cured. That's why he's wearing that belt.
I would think maybe it's the first ever Heimlich manoeuvre, and it's just being completely misunderstood. I was like, he's insane. He's gone purple. He can't breathe. That must mean he's insane. And yes, so this guy just, Guthlac.
Did the demon, you know, gave look him a Heimlich like a chipolata manoeuvre. Wrapped in bacon? A bit, yes.
Did the demon look like a Kinder Surprise egg toy?
Countries don't exist anymore.
So there is definitely a thread that goes from, I mean, you go back to the old days, miracles, parting the Red Sea, you know, big walls of water
rubbish,
either
mate,
side.
Rubbish, just showing off. It's not real miracles.
When that gets made into the movie, Charlton Heston parts, walls of water. But in reality, something that probably happened was that Moses just found a shallow bit.
No, Mike. These are the old miracles that were great. And as time's gone on, they've gone a bit lamer and lamer. I mean, the burning bush, you could, you know, whatever. But then it gets to nowadays, if you see Jesus in a piece of toast, like this is the aim. So in the Middle Ages, they were somewhere in between the two. I'm sure you all remember the tale of the 5 loaves and 2 fishes that were used to feed the 5,000. I heard that being said again recently when I was in church for my sins. It says, and he fed the 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, and they had everything they wanted to eat. I mean, they didn't, did they? They didn't. But let's let that slide and realise that for my
Are you just accusing the Son of God there of just making the world's worst tuna sandwiches? So, no, there's more. I've got more. No, you're fine. I'm really not hungry.
Yeah, no, I'm full. Ooh, totally full. Yeah, ooh.
That mayonnaise you got, Jesus. Yeah, is that left over from that wedding you were at a few months ago?
Yeah, God. Jesus. You know how we live in quite a hot climate and there's very little refrigeration. How old is that mayonnaise? They're like, well, it's about 3 weeks old, but fortunately, I am the Son of God, so I could perform many miracles. And was like, fucking rank, mate, I'm not touching that.
5,000 people in the hot midday sun. Fish is a bad choice.
Should have given out Calippos. So we've got many, many a loaf thing. And my alma mater, Durham, has a saint called Saint Cuthbert. So I chose this one. Now, Cuthbert had particularly lame miracles. So this one I'm going to tell you about the time that a mystery guest came to dinner at Saint Cuthbert's house. So shortly after he received his tonsure, which I think is the way they do the haircut.
Yep.
He met a man, St. Cuthbert did, along the road, and Cuthbert, he invited him to his place and washed his hands and feet. A little callback there to his little mate Jesus. And Cuthbert washed his hands and feet, and then he looked for some food, but he couldn't find any food in his house. He searched all the cupboards, he searched everywhere, he couldn't find a single morsel of food. But then he returned to this guy who was sitting at his table, and lo and behold, there were 3 loaves of bread on the table. They ate the loaves of bread, and when he ate the loaves of bread, he realized that this must mean that his guest was an angel, not that he had 3 loaves of bread in a bag.
The only time you'd buy 3 loaves of bread in one go, isn't it, as if it's marked down and you're in the supermarket, like, oh wow, that's 10p, oh, I'll get 3 of them and
put them
in
the
freezer.
Exactly. You could just toast your frozen bread. It's fine.
And lo, did St. Cuthbert also find that he had 4 pints of milk that had gone a bit weird?
the proof of this angel, the fact that there were bread loaves on the table, which I've experienced there being bread loaves on a table, but that's proof that he's an angel. And then presumably they just ate bread on its
dry
own.
Bread, yeah,
dry crusty bread.
Countries that don't exist anymore.
Medieval medicine was definitely, you know, hit and miss, let's say, at best. But one of the, especially in the Middle Ages, the milk of Mary was seen as a legitimate thing. Even the Virgin Mary's breast milk was...
How much of that is in circulation, though? Like, I mean, like someone's got, oh, yeah, I've got a pint of...
I think a lot of it's UHT now, just to sort of give it a longer shelf life.
It has to be after 600 years.
Well, exactly. I mean, there are something like, I don't know how many variously supposedly accredited foreskins of Jesus there are in circulation.
Yeah. But he must have been, you know, well hung.
There's certainly some regions of southern Italy where I wouldn't trust the calamari, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. But anyway, I think the point...
He probably kept respawning them.
Apparently there was a sick monk who called out, and the Virgin Mary came and literally gave him some breast milk by putting one of her holy jugs in his unholy mouth, and then where hey.
The Virgin Mary has some quite impressive miracles associated with her. There is the story that her house, so the Virgin Mary's house from the Holy Land, was apparently lifted up by angels and transported to
Italy.
See, that's
good. That's good.
And the thing is, there is a weird old house in Italy.
Well, there you go.
And everyone says that is it. And
proof.
I don't know. I mean, do you want to believe that angels put it there? But
are you telling me that angels are like a removal service? Yeah. They're not just naffing about.
Yes, some of them do bread. Some of them do removals.
House removals. Mm. Yeah. They're like, yeah, well, what we want to do is get like 12 seraphim, 6 cherubim, and some of the other entity angels, and then we should have enough weight just to pick our house up and move it a couple of inches. It's just like, no wonder it takes them so long just hanging around, drinking their milk. With 5 sugars, just waiting for something to happen.
That's it. Oh yeah, yes.
But that milk would be like steroid milk. Like it's like fight milk. Like that would really take milk. You to another level.
Yeah, but if it had been fight milk, Jesus wouldn't have died on the cross. He would have pulled himself off, just like smashing all the Romans up. You know, it's just like, oh, now it's personal. But
pulled himself off.
Well, you heard, Mike. You heard. You're gonna make a thing of it. Yeah.
In America at the moment, there is people, because one of the things people don't like about Jesus is that he seems a bit weedy.
Christianity.
So there's muscular Christianity now, which depicts him ripping himself off the cross with his big stacked steroid arms and things like that. But I mean, which is a shame, because obviously the image of Jesus is nicked wholesale from the god Dionysus, who liked wine and the theatre. So of course Jesus is inherently a little bit of a darling.
It's a bit of a difficult one.
Great abs, though.
Yeah, because then they also say, well, he died really quickly, and that was a miracle. And like, was he really?
But then they would say he died really slowly. That was a miracle. Oh, he died. That was a miracle. He had legs. That was a miracle.
They poked his side, and then nothing came out. That was a miracle.
They poked his side, and stuff came out. That was a miracle.
That was a miracle. Just the whole thing.
Right, he woke up yesterday. That was a miracle. He went down, he had some breakfast. That was a miracle. The second Cuthbert one, it's even worse than the fact that he found some bread on a table. It's that he was down washing himself in having a meditative paddle in the North Sea. And he came back onto land and his feet were wet. And his feet were dried by the fur and breath of otters.
Otters, wonderful.
No.
I mean, this is a little bit Disney princess stuff, isn't it? The animals, sort of. Both St. Francis of Assisi and St. Wilfrid, who gets a mention in the podcast for allegedly being the man who was meant to convert the people of Alt Clute to mainstream Roman Catholicism. Yep. St. Wilfrid once said mass to an empty church during a storm, and that is considered a miracle.
And then the
famous story of St. Francis of Assisi, who used to go out and preach to no one in particular, and so is often depicted as like the animals listening to his wonderful preaching.
So there's one fucking pigeon there.
I don't know. I mean, Ed, you'll sympathise with this, but like doing a gig to an empty room is not a miracle.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
Getting the train home and looking yourself in the mirror after doing a gig to an empty room, that is a miracle. But the gig itself, no.
And doing it again, that's even a bigger miracle.
I know a guy who preaches outside of Brixton Station every day, and people just walk past him and nobody listens at all.
There's a miracle.
That is a miracle. That's not true. Have you not seen the squirrels all attending? You know, like
that's true.
Nibbling a nut and passing it on and then crucifying each other. You know, they're trees.
You laugh about it.
Their tails cut off and then put in their mouth.
Chimps have got religion now, so they're not far behind us.
Is it because they're imitating something?
That's it. Yeah, they should never have given those chimps to the Pope. Now, the Vatican Zoo now has elected its own chimp papacy.
Oh, primates. I see.
Yeah, no. Chimps, honestly, have. Sorry, that was a. Chimps do have got their own religion. So there are trees that, in a group of chimps, there are certain trees that they will not sit in, and they will sometimes take a stick and appear to throw it at the bottom of the tree that everyone has decided that they're not going to sit in. Like it's a.
Why?
Wow.
So they have ritualistic behaviour.
Yeah. No, I can imagine
so
that.
So how far away are we from, realistically, some kind of monkey Christ?
But he'd be great, though, because he could just, like, pull himself up and not, you know, be fine.
Yeah.
He'd be in his element on the cross, just swinging around.
Countries that don't exist anymore.
I suppose what we've really got to the basis of here is that medieval saints were...
Lame,
but also a bit pagan, too.
Yeah.
Because you've got talking birds, you've got the sort of things which are minor things but make more sense if you think of them in terms of deities of the water and of trees and of rivers, you know, and small scale local experiences. And incidentally, a lot of people had only recently been converted. And that's the sort of miracles they needed. They needed loads of saints. They needed their many godhead, their many deities, in order to be sold on this one god thing. One god meaning 5 million bazillion saints who are all a saint of something. And so really, there's no difference between that and what came before, which is just having a god for absolutely everything.
It was the way you sort of, the church tried to wean people off of paganism. So often, certainly in the Mediterranean, wasn't it? So if there'd been a famous shrine to a god, what you did was the church wouldn't say stop going there. They'd just move in the bones of a saint and say carry on going there.
Yeah.
Also pray for healing. But remember, this is the church of St. Stephen and not, you know, not the shrine of Hermes or whatever. And there's the patriarch in the 4th century, the patriarch of Alexandria complains that the worship of Mary, of the Virgin Mary, has become interchangeable of that with Minerva, of Isis, sorry, Isis and Minerva and Athena all became kind of interchangeable in the ancient world anyway, and which is probably why you get your weird breast milk story, because obviously the breasts of...
It was like because the Hercules and Malkets or whatever in the Carthaginian... Yeah, it's always... merging and sticking new gods on top of old and, you know, putting one against the other and one claiming heritage of the other and saying it's a continuation. But of course it is, because it's almost like it's
made up. It's like music without the lawsuits.
Exactly. It's nice. They've rebadged it, you fool.
Yeah, exactly. You stole my god idea. See you in court.
The one I feel sorry for in all of this is God's wife.
Yeah.
It's basically been written out of the whole... Saga.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Asherah.
Yeah.
Oh, God's
Father,
wife.
Father, Son,
me.
And what's the other one? Holy Spirit? Mum. Yeah, missing.
Yeah, we're three dudes in one, no chicks.
Yeah, no chicks.
No chicks. No need for chicks. It's all miraculous.
It was a miracle.
It was a miracle. Countries that don't exist anymore.
Thank you, Mike Shepherd, for coming on and talking in a very loose and wonderful way and that's partly because that's how we planned it or didn't plan it or whatever, about Alclut, about British culture, and of course about medieval miracles. That was a miracle.
That was a miracle.
That was a miracle.
It was a miracle.
It's always a delight to have you on, and yeah, it's we will definitely see you in the 5th to 67th series of Countries That Don't Exist Anymore. So be careful not to move or change your names, or, you know, just don't do any crimes or be a witness to any terrible murder. It's just important that you continue being a guest on the show.
It's magic. That was good fun. It was nice to learn a little bit of something about the those crazy guys. And
and
their kind of Celtic Scandi artwork. I'd never seen anything from the Govan school before.
It's just a layer on layer on layer of different cultures, one bleeding into another, sort of sedimentary human rocks, which make up these isles, I suppose.
Mike, is there anything you'd like to promote on our show?
Oh, yeah, by the way, Mike, are you going up to Edinburgh?
I will be very briefly be in Edinburgh at the start of the festival.
What are you doing?
Oh, don't mention this in the podcast, because I think it always ends up just breaking people's hearts, but I'm working with... on our Edinburgh show, but people always get sad if when they find out that their favourite comedians employ other writers sometimes. Yeah, somewhere between sad and angry sometimes.
Wow.
I was once at a function at my mum's old church, and I'd only recently started writing for the news quiz, and you know, I was sort of quite humbly saying, oh, you know, it's great, you know, getting to be in a writer's room and work on the script for the, you know, it's a great show on Radio 4. And then this guy suddenly angrily pulled his wife over and was like, I can't remember what it was. It was Margaret, you know that guy that you like so much? Apparently he writes everything that he says. I was like, that's not why.
I said.
But you're like, oh, I just realised that at that point, being a comedy writer, you're essentially a shatterer of dreams.
So the creation of the nation of Scotland was not in vain. After all, well, on that positive note, we end this episode.
Thanks,
stay
Mike.
Stay tuned, everybody. We'll be picking up again with our episode on Ruthenians, of course. So we'll be talking about the Ruths, and then our next main episode that's coming in a couple of episodes will be about Comancheria, the land of the Comanche. That's going to be super exciting. And the first time we've done North American nation, which wasn't a bunch of European swindlers. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, so join us then on...
Countries that don't exist anymore. They used to exist, but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for. It's countries that don't exist.